or skimmed them. Skimmed most of them. Parts. The first few pages, at least.
Yes, but they have also been all over the newspapers, and they're the only thing half the students have been talking about for weeks.
Oh, talking to people. That's a thing I should do again sometime.
Right, I said sheepishly.
What's the deal?
Teams of five to get ready for the first tower incursion.
Her reply was instant.
I've got Patrick on my team already.
Patrick was an unsurprising choice. He was both talented and very easy to work with.
What about Roland?
Sarah made an ugly scowl.
He had other obligations.
Huh. That would be interesting if I actually cared. This was giving me an idea, though.
You ask any physical fighters yet?
She shook her head.
Okay, you sold me. I'll join your team, if you let me bring a friend.
She drew back and crossed her arms.
Who said I want you?
I gave her a knowing look. I'm not going to beg.
Fine, fine, you can join us. And you can pick someone. But get Jin too, yeah?
She wants Jin on the team? That was interesting. I would have expected her to go with any of the other students we'd known for years. I think I can sell him on the idea. Where do I sign up?
Oh, don't worry about that. I'll take care of it. I've known how to forge your signature for years.
Knowledge is distinct from mastery. If your idea of my signature is anything like your homages to the great artists of...
I was six when I drew those, Corin. Six! Are you never going to let that go?
Not if you keep giving me such perfect reactions.
Ugh!
We made our way to the shops without any further incidents, and she helped me pick out some of the items I needed. Fortunately, I'd just gotten my weekly stipend that morning. Otherwise, I'd have been begging Sarah for a loan. I was only going to make one or two items immediately, but I picked up a handful of mundane accessories for future enchantments for myself, as well as the next few things Jin was going to need. I had a lot of options in mind for my first item, even with my relatively limited resources. In terms of function, I had a few main things I wanted to focus on. First, I needed to make sure I stayed intact. My shield sigil was a good start for this, especially because I could recharge it myself, but eventually I wanted something that was stronger and wouldn't require any upkeep from my side. It also had a clear weakness to kinetic energy. Most shielding spells seemed to dampen the force of physical attacks, but failed to stop them entirely. I'd need to research how to counter that. Maybe a transference-based shield spell? I also needed more raw offensive power. When Professor Orden had broken into my room, her tunic had been able to effortlessly absorb my dueling cane's blasts. Maybe she wasn't a fair bar to set. I couldn't expect to beat opponents with emerald-level enchantments that caught me by surprise in a fair fight. But even my own humble shield sigil was capable of soaking about 15 hits from a standard dueling cane before failing. Presumably, that was why Lord Teft had felt comfortable letting us throw spells at each other on our first day of class. The sigil defenses were more than capable of stopping anything your average student could have produced. Sarah's summoning-based attack spell might have broken through a shield, but I really had no idea. It was visually impressive, but I didn't know how much punch those shards of ice had. If I couldn't break a simple shield, I couldn't be expected to handle any monster of significant power either. My sword might have done the job, but I still didn't know exactly how it worked, and I wasn't going to get into close range with anything threatening if I could avoid it. I had just enough sword training to know that there were plenty of people who were better. Information gathering was another high priority. I still had access to multiple items that I couldn't even properly identify, which meant that I couldn't use them to the height of their capabilities. Besides identifying items, I also wanted anything that would help give me clues on how to solve the multitude of puzzles inside the tower, or otherwise help me make my way through. Maybe I could eventually find spells to locate other people. I'd need to do some research on that. I knew practically nothing about the capabilities and limitations of divination. Finally, I wanted some items to improve my mobility. Things that would let me safely traverse tower rooms with gaping chasms and spinning blades. Teleportation was the most obvious choice, followed by things that would simply increase my speed or agility.
Flight could be useful, too, if I could manage it.
From those broad options, I came up with a short list of things I could actually make. A better shield sigil was an option, and there were types listed in the Advanced Artifice book, which I probably needed to return to the library at some point, that were designed to stop kinetic attacks. They were all listed as at least Carnelian level, but they didn't look difficult. In terms of firepower, there were a lot of options. Mages, unsurprisingly, loved researching new and exciting ways to explode things just as much as anyone else. I found a lot of runes dedicated to variations on dueling canes. One that fired elemental bolts instead of gray mana, for example, or that had specialized enhancements for attacks, bolts that homed in on enemies, for example, or blasted through basic shielding. A lot of these options were probably within my capabilities, but they were also common, and that meant there would be accessible defenses against them. They'd still be perfectly viable in the tower, but I wanted something I could use if I was attacked by another human that was potentially more experienced than I was. That meant something less obvious. Maybe an enchanted ring? I shelved that idea for the moment, looking at the other categories. For information gathering, I found several enchantments for interfacing with other enchantments, like how my sigil detected other projectiles. I found very few detection spells that could be used on their own, though. Most of the divination enchantments I'd looked up for Jin were only useful in specific situations. Things like seeing in the dark, detecting ambient mana, and seeing through walls. I really wanted something that would give me information about magical items, but I didn't find anything like that in my books. I'd have to ask a more experienced enchanter about it later. Mobility was almost entirely out of my reach. I could make an enchantment to increase the height I could jump, but not a lot else. Even increasing my running speed would require several runes I didn't have listed in my books. Apparently, just adding mobility by itself would add force to my motions without any stability, so I'd basically be blasting myself forward with each step. Hilarious, but impractical. So all in all, blowing things up seemed best. I picked up a couple cheap rings, but a bit of study told me they wouldn't work on their own. An item's mana capacity was based on its size and materials, and a simple metal band couldn't hold much of anything. Gems could hold a great deal, but there were two problems with that. One, I couldn't afford any decent gems. Two, I didn't know how to inscribe them with runes properly. Etching metal was easy. Drawing on the surface of a diamond? I wasn't sure, but that sounded a lot harder. So, what else was easily concealed and potentially a good source for directing attack magic? Necklaces had the same problems as rings, and also the magic would emanate directly from the item. I couldn't aim my neck very well. Really, that last part meant I needed either something handheld or something on my hand. I was back to dueling canes. Or maybe a glove. Standard cloth and leather gloves had terrible mana capacities too, as it turned out. There were specialized types of materials that could hold a lot of mana, but they were well outside my price range. Gauntlets, on the other hand? Those could hold a fair bit of mana, and I could easily afford a pair. I was worried that a traditional gauntlet would impede my ability to manipulate anything with my hands, though, so I settled on a demi-gauntlet that I'd wear with a leather glove underneath.
So, what you doing?
I'd made the mistake of asking Sarah to watch me work on this enchantment, since it was technically Carnelian level and I wasn't precisely allowed to be trying it yet. There was only a tiny chance I'd detonate the gauntlet in the process, and I was pretty sure my shield would save me. Probably. I sat on the floor, laying the gauntlet down flat on my enchanting tile, a square of wood that I used to center whatever I was working on. I laid down my enchanting book on the left side of the tile and my measuring implements on the right. The exact size of a rune wasn't important. You could make a tiny rune on the side of a jewel if you knew how. The proportions and angles of lines on each symbol were supposedly relevant to the function, though, so
I'd have to measure those. I didn't know how exact I needed to be, but I was going to take my time on this one. Before I started, I used 4 clamps to attach the demi-gauntlet to the wooden board. It moved a little if I lifted the wood, but it was pretty steady once I put it down. I'm making a gauntlet that will serve as an emergency weapon. I don't know what I'm calling it yet. Blasting gauntlet, maybe? Power glove? Sarah snorted. Power glove sounds pretty bad. I'll think of something better. Anyway, I'm going to try to give it 2 different functions. Raw mana projection and kinetic energy projection. In theory, I'll be able to use 1 at a time or both at once. This is going to make the enchanting process a bit complicated. Okay, she sat down across from me. And I'm here to... go get help if I explode? Oh, got it. Can I laugh at you first? Heh. You've never asked for permission before. Right you are. Okay, let the fireworks begin. I rolled my eyes. It comforted me to have Sarah around in case this went badly, even if she'd never let me forget about it. Bringing a mender would have probably been more logical, but I didn't know any of them very well yet. In retrospect, maybe healing should have been on my list of things to consider for enchantments, but I was committed by that point. All right. First thing I'm doing is setting up capacity runes for each type of mana. These prevent the gauntlet from containing more than a certain amount of mana of that type. I opened up a container of paint and dipped my brush in it. I'd write the runes out in paint first, verify the dimensions, and then etch into the metal using my other tools if the rune had been drawn correctly. More experienced enchanters could jump straight to etching, but I was working with runes I'd only practiced on paper. The risk was too great. I drew 3 capacity runes, 1 for gray mana, 1 for transference, and 1 for mind. I checked them, wiped the mind one, and redid it twice more before I was satisfied.
What's the 3rd one for?
I pointed at the mind one. This one is going to connect to a rune that detects when I want the gauntlet to activate. If it was like a cane, it'd just activate whenever I was in contact with an activation rune, which would be all the time since I'm going to be wearing it.
It senses your thoughts? Isn't that really advanced?
I shook my head. No, it's not sensing my thoughts exactly. It just waits for me to send a bit of mental mana into the rune. Then it activates the other rune functions.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
I flashed her a quick smile, then refocused. Going to have to be quiet for a second for this part. I need to concentrate while I engrave. I adjusted my clamps to make sure the gauntlet was going to stay where it was and picked up the engraving rod. It was one of the simplest enchanter implements, and the first one I'd learned to use. It looked like an ink pen with a tiny gemstone on the tip and a few runes written on the side. I pressed the activation rune, which caused the tip of the rod to vibrate rapidly. When I pressed against the metal, the vibrating tip cut into the surface of the gauntlet. Slowly, I traced the painted runes. It only took a few minutes, but I was sweating by the time I turned the engraver off. Okay, first step done. I set the engraver down and used a pair of wet and dry cloths to wipe off the remaining paint. After that, I reviewed the runes. The lengths and angles looked fine as far as I could tell.
Not bad. So you can enchant it now?
I chuckled. That's 3 runes out of 12. Next, I put in the recharging runes. They'll let it draw on ambient mana to refill each mana type up to the capacity over time. Then, I put in the function runes, the ones that actually make the item do anything. After that, it's the activation runes, which tell it when to do it. Sarah frowned.
Don't you only need 1 activation rune? The mind one?
I blinked. I mean, I was going to make the mind rune activate the other 2 activation runes, but maybe I could skip that step? I paused for a minute, frowning as I considered. I don't actually know if 1 activation rune can trigger 3 functions or not. I could try... Wait, I interrupted my own train of thought. I'm doing this all wrong. I need two different mind runes either way, or I'm going to always activate the gray and the transference runes at the same time.
Sarah leaned forward, looking at the gauntlet.
Yeah, but I still don't see why you'd need other activation runes. You're only activating it one way, yeah? Can't you connect one mind rune to each function rune?
I'm not sure. That's never how they show it in the introductory book. But to be fair, I skipped the intermediate ones, and most of this comes from a more advanced book.
She side-eyed me.
Maybe you're thinking too much about what the book says and not enough about what makes sense.
I could look it up, I suppose. I shook my head.
But I'd never get back to it on time for the test if I stopped now. I'll finish this one the way I was planning to, but that is an interesting idea. It'd save me time and materials if it works. I'll look it up later.
She grinned at me.
Maybe for when you make me one.
I found myself smiling back.
Sure, I said.
That was the first indication she'd given me that she was interested in one of my items. It was kind of nice. I liked feeling like I could do something useful.
As soon as you can afford one.
Charging your family? You cut deep, Corin. Here I am risking my life, my very existence, to help make sure you finish your first item properly.
It's not my first item. It's my first high-risk item.
But your point is taken, Sarah. I'll make you something.
She made a gesture of victory, and I grinned as I resumed my work.
All right, time to test this thing out.
Fortunately, there was a whole section of buildings dedicated to enchanting and a number of gray chambers set aside for testing new equipment. I hadn't bothered to use one before, since my previous enchantments were so simplistic, but this probably warranted a degree of caution. Even if the gauntlet worked correctly, it was going to fire a blast of mana that was more powerful than any weapon I'd used before. Firing off bursts of energy in random places wasn't exactly wise. I signed the paperwork to use one of the chambers, and Sarah and I stepped inside. We were assured that the chambers were monitored and that menders would be close by if anything went wrong. We stepped into the assigned room. It was small, about the same size as a single dorm room. The walls were gray stone. I didn't recognize the type of stone. Maybe that was the source of the name of the rooms? I activated my attunement, noting that the stone had a soft glow, but I didn't see any runes on the inside of the room. If it had them, they'd done the smart thing and put them outside of the chamber. Otherwise, I'd have to guess the stone had inherent magical properties. Possibly both. I turned the attunement back off. I was starting to get headaches more often, and I suspected the bright lights I was picking up with the attunement active were a part of that.
So these walls are designed to handle magical blasts?
Sarah tapped a finger against the stone.
Seems like they'd be a good place for any of us to practice, really.
I made a broad gesture with my hand.
Yeah, but there aren't enough of them for all the students to use them. I imagine they're expensive to make.
The dueling grounds serve a similar function, but allow for larger groups to practice at a lower cost.
So, why not just test enchantments in one of the dueling fields?
My laugh was sharp. Because an instructor can probably repair the damage from a careless elementalist. If an enchanter makes a big enough mistake, you could probably wipe out a small town.
Sarah paused her inspection of the room and turned to me with a quizzical look.
How is that possible?
Wouldn't the detonation be based on how much mana you put in it?
Normally, yeah. But remember what I said about capacity runes? Now imagine I got that wrong. This gauntlet could probably hold about 10 times the mana I'm putting into it before it explodes. Now that's nowhere near a town-level explosion. Maybe a building at best.
I lifted my chin to scratch my neck, just to do something with my hand.
But let's say, I continued, you've got some fancy climber who wants a full suit of enchanted armor. It has to be good, so it's made of a material that can absorb several times more mana than usual. Kyanite or something. Now, someone makes a mistake on the capacity rune on that. Let's say it's 20 times the material of my gauntlet, and the material can hold 10 times more per area. So 200 times more mana. 200 times bigger explosion. That'd be a small town, I'd say.
That's kind of horrifying, actually.
Sarah folded her arms.
So these rooms let you run tests to make sure each rune is working, right?
Actually, from what I understand, they're more about containing the explosion if I did something horribly wrong.
Oh. She paused and glanced from side to side. I'm going to go stand outside now.
I laughed again.
I'll see you in a minute.
She had a good point about checking each individual rune's function, but I didn't have a good way of doing that. A diviner could, maybe, and that meant that I could potentially build a tool to do it myself, given time. In the meantime, I could only test the hole, and that meant activating it. I waited for Sarah to get outside, then took a deep breath and sent a flicker of mana into the activation rune. Then the world went white.
Rin? Corrin! Can you hear me? Wake up!
Sarah was standing over me. When did she get back in the room?
Why was I lying down?
I didn't remember lying down. Someone else was next to her. I frowned. It was another student, but I didn't recognize her. She was tall, with dark yellow skin like Jin's. She knelt down next to me, waving a hand over my head. A soft white glow enveloped my face, forcing my eyes shut. The soothing chill that came with the glow helped numb the pain in the back of my head, which I hadn't realized was hurting until the chill came along.
Oh, I'm being healed, I realized, which means I'm injured.
I think I'm okay, I mumbled.
Don't move, the mender instructed. Don't talk. Don't do anything.
I complied. It was several minutes before she even let me talk.
You're lucky. Your shield sigil absorbed the majority of the blast itself. The explosion carried you into the wall, though, and you hit your head. The sigil looks to have softened that, too. I don't see any fractures or any internal bleeding. You're very lucky. The next time you want to test an enchantment with an attack spell, you should have a more experienced enchanter look it over first.
That was true. I probably should have considered that. And after a few moments, I managed...
Thank you, the mender looked to Sarah. He shouldn't have any permanent damage. Can you accompany him back to his room? I need to go check on the other rooms.
Sarah nodded with an expression of deadly seriousness.
Of course. The mender left us alone.
So that didn't go as planned. I tried to smile. My face felt weird.
I'm resisting the urge to smack you right now.
Your willpower is, as always, admirable.
Sarah sighed, rolling her eyes.
Ugh! At least you didn't break your snark.
Oh, don't worry about that. My snark is indestructible. It's the core of my being and quite possibly the universe as a whole.
Arrogance also intact.
You think you can stand?
I frowned, looking over the side of the bed. Everything was wobbly. Sarah was especially wobbly. Why were we sailing?
No, I'm pretty sure that I'm a no on that.
Fine, Sarah sat down next to me. Never do that again.
I couldn't manage a nod. My neck was still feeling too stiff.
Right.
Sarah waited with me for as long as I needed. As it turned out, that was the rest of the night. It was 2 days before I was largely functional again. Sarah kept a close eye on me the whole time, even coming by to bring me food when I was recovering in bed the day after the incident. Much like a retainer might have, if I had any. As it was, I was just grateful to have anyone to help me. I owed her one. The explosion's cause was fairly obvious. I'd somehow activated both the gray mana and the transference mana at the same time, and they'd mixed. As Lord Teft had told us, like deflects like, opposites nullify, and other mixes tend to explode. This was apparently one of the explodey kinds. I didn't see how I'd managed to activate both, though. I had fixed the obvious problem beforehand, thanks to Sarah's comment. I had two separate activation runes that led to each type of mana. So, I took it to Professor Vellum, the most likely person to be able to diagnose the problem. Her office was littered with... everything. Books, unlabeled potion bottles, children's toys, weapons, at least one very mean-looking house cat, more potion bottles... I barely managed to step over the mess at the entrance when I moved to hand her the gauntlet.
You tried to use this? Goddess, child! You're lucky to be alive at all!
The rest of us might be less lucky for it if you intend to keep being so reckless. I frowned. I have two separate runes. How did the mana get mixed?
Oh, dear child. Do you know how sensitive those activation runes you made are? Take a look here.
She picked up something from the table, a wooden stick, and handed it to me.
What's different about these runes and the ones you used?
I glanced them over. They're completely different ones.
Yes, of course, but what's systemically different?
Interestingly, much like my gauntlet, the stick had multiple activation runes, one on either end of the wood, each connected via a line to another set of runes. I was still looking when she spoke again.
The circles, boy! The circles! Have you never seen a magic item before?
Oh, the runes on the stick were circled, just like they were on my dueling cane, and my etching rod, and my engraving rod. My books didn't say anything about circles.
Of course not, because you aren't reading books about using multifunction enchantments, or even basic attack enchantments, both of which are for second-year students. Students that understand the fundamentals of how not to kill themselves. Goddess child, what did you think the circles on your dueling cane were for?
I winced. I'd skimmed through some of the second-year texts, but I hadn't read them cover to cover. I guess I assumed they were cosmetic. They make the runes look more like buttons.
Like buttons!
Vellum let out a deep sigh.
Goddess! This generation, please, let it be the last that I'm blessed with teaching.
She gestured to the stick.
Hand that back to me.
I gave her the stick, and she handed the gauntlet back to me in exchange.
The circles are far from cosmetic. They're boundaries. They prevent access mana from escaping, and they also help to prevent the runes from being accidentally activated by ambient mana, or through other effects. They make it so the rune only activates when you put something inside the circle itself to feed it mana.
Meaning that without them, my gauntlet could have triggered any number of different ways. If I walked into a mana-rich area that had the right type of mana in the air, or the gauntlet was hit by a spell,
precisely. You're lucky to have your head on your shoulders right now. You're doubly lucky to have that hand. I'm not sure how you managed to keep it.
I was wearing a shield sigil.
Ah! At least you did something right in that case. She sighed. Let me see the glove again.
I handed it back to her.
She frowned, shaking her head. What gave you the idea for this contraption?
I folded my arms. I really wasn't enjoying being interrogated, but I didn't exactly have any choice about answering. It seems like there's always something attacking me, and I'm never properly prepared. In the tower, in dueling class, even in my bedroom. Professor Vellum snorted.
I heard about that. I don't approve of Auden's antics, but she is funny, at least. That's better than I can say for most of our staff.
I was less amused. In virtually every encounter, I've been impossibly outclassed in combat. I considered other options, things to make me move faster or block attacks, but this is what I had the materials for, and sometimes it's necessary to have a strong enough weapon to deter your enemies.
I quite agree, but why not use a tested design? There are dozens, if not hundreds, of designs for dueling canes alone. Why make your own?
A gauntlet is something I can always have on me. It's also not an obvious weapon. I would have preferred a ring, but I couldn't afford a gem with a reasonable mana capacity.
Vellum crinkled her lips. At least you were thinking. That's better than I can say for the majority of my students.
She shook her head.
But I can't let you keep making disasters like this.
I looked down. I'll make sure to draw boundaries next time, Professor.
No, 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 it's more than that. This isn't your first incident.
Don't think I didn't hear about you overcharging that war cane. You're experimenting, and experimenting is always going to have risks.
What do you want me to do, then? My palms stung, and I looked down to see my fists clenched tightly, nails digging into my skin.
Stop enchanting until my second year, assuming I can survive that long? Goddess, no, boy, of course not!
She handed the gauntlet back, and I had to unclench one of my hands to take it from her.
Never stop enchanting. Never stop creating. Never stop thinking. That is your greatest asset, even if it can also be your greatest weakness. No, I don't want you to stop.
She stood up, her eyes sharp and gleaming.
No, I want you to listen, because I'm going to teach you some real enchantments.
Chapter 12. Testing Phase 1. I left Professor Vellum's office with my mind in a much better place. In spite of her gruff exterior, she provided me with the key information I needed to make my gauntlet work. Better yet, she promised to start private lessons on much more potent enchantments in the future, the kind I couldn't find in textbooks, even the ones designed for graduates. It put a bounce back in my step. I fixed the gauntlet almost immediately and then found an older student to check it. He seemed pretty sure it would work. It did work. It worked beautifully. The transference blasts were sufficient to hurl a person across a room with ease. I suspected the gray mana blasts would break ribs or maybe kill a small monster like a slime outright. It was about at that point that I remembered I had a team test coming up later in the week, and I still needed to recruit two people. Getting Jin, as Sarah had requested, was simple enough. He came by regularly to pick up the small items I was still working on enchanting for him. I only had a few items left that I thought I could make, and I hoped to finish those before the test if possible.
Hey, team competition's coming up. Do you have a team yet?
Jin replied, projecting disinterest. He tossed the bracelet I'd handed him from his right hand to his left.
Do you?
I have Sarah and Patrick so far. With you, we'd only need one more, and I have a strong candidate in mind. He unclasped the bracelet, and then slipped it around his left wrist and snapped it shut.
I'll be unable to use the full capabilities of any attunement. Is that acceptable?
I nodded. Yeah, I think they'll be fine with it. With all the things I've been making you, I suspect you're better prepared than any regular attuned would be at this point anyway.
His lips stretched into a thin smile.
Better even than you think.
It was so typical of Jin to play mysterious that I couldn't help but laugh. He looked offended for a moment and opened his mouth, but closed it a second later without saying anything. Then he smiled again himself and huffed a soft laugh. This smile was smaller than the one before it, but he was still wearing it as he left my room. My next candidate would be a tougher sell. I headed to the women's dorms. It took some asking around just to find the right room. I thought I saw Cecily Lambert in the distance while I headed toward the tortoise's heart. As with every time I'd seen her on campus, I did my best to pretend I hadn't seen her. I still wasn't ready for the conversations we needed to have. The tortoise's heart was a smaller facsimile of the tortoise spire, one of the 6 shifting spires. Smaller, in this case, meant a mere 12 stories in height. The heart's defining features were the encircling walls, designed to resemble those of the tortoise's shell. The wall was constructed from hundreds of green hexagonal panels, each etched with dozens of runes. I didn't know if they were actually functional, but I was willing to bet that they were. A second shell-like fixture hung over the top of the building, casting shade over the entire structure. The only way into the building was a solitary ramp leading to the middle of the building. From there, I had to take a winding staircase to get to the appropriate floor. All in all, the building felt less like student housing and more like a fortification. I kind of loved it, but I would never be getting in.
At any given time, only the 120 best students in Tortoise Division were permitted to stay here. They retained their old rooms as well. That was necessary, given that they could be kicked out of the Tortoise's heart the day their points scores dropped below a competitor's. Every class had equivalent buildings. For Phoenix Division, we had the more simply named Phoenix Hall for men and the elegant Phoenix's Wings for women. Ours were smaller, however, and only housed 50 students of each sex. I was paying close attention to my own rankings. Graduating was a high priority, but I wasn't anywhere close to qualifying for the Phoenix Hall, at least yet. When I checked at the divinatory last, they told me I was number 238 in my division, with a total of 112 points. We had about 1,500 students in Phoenix Division total, which made my rank respectable, but nowhere near the top. I was nervous for what felt like an infinite number of reasons when I stood in front of the door to one of the rooms preparing to knock. The main reason was agonizingly simple. In spite of confirming 3 times, I still worried I was at the wrong room. The other reasons were a bit more personal and involved embarrassing hypotheticals of being rejected. I almost turned away. Instead, I just stared blankly at the door for a solid minute before I got frustrated enough to overwhelm my fear. Then I knocked.
"Just a minute!"
It was the right voice. That made things better and worse. Marissa opened her door a moment later.
"Corin? What are you doing here?"
I gave a pathetic little wave. Hi. I was, wondering if you had a team for the test this week." Her mouth twitched downward a fraction.
"No. Why?"
"I was hoping you'd join my team. We've got a pretty good group, but we're lacking frontline fighters." She leaned back on her heels and folded her arms across her chest.
"Rupert isn't on your team, is he?"
Her eyes flicked behind me, scanning outside the door. I followed her gaze, twisting to see the empty walkway behind me before turning back to her figure in the doorway, baffled.
"Rupert?"
She blinked.
"Kent,"
she said, as though this were obvious.
"Rupert Kent? From dueling class?"
I shrugged. "I didn't know his first name. No, he's not on the team. Why would that be a problem?"
Well...
Marissa slumped. Her head dipped for a moment, then lifted. She blew her hair out of her face, and her eyes had lost most of the wariness from before.
"Do you want to come inside?"
I shrugged and gave her a closed-mouth half-smile.
"Sure. Come on."
I followed her into the room, closing the door behind me. She sat down on her bed, waving to a seat near a writing desk. I took a seat and shifted in the chair, not sure how to dispel the awkward atmosphere. My eyes took in the room while I avoided her gaze. It was half again the size of mine, and nicer by far. The floor was covered in pristine blue-white carpet. The walls looked freshly painted, and the room's ceiling was a couple feet higher up. Her bed was much bigger than the one I'd been provided, too, and a metal-covered serving tray was sitting on the writing desk beside her books. One of the perks of these elite buildings was that they had their own kitchens, and those kitchens were available to deliver food directly to the rooms. All that enhanced my interest in getting into Phoenix Hall, though I was still more interested in the points to help me graduate than the added luxury.
"Don't get the wrong idea. I'm just inviting you in to talk."
I nodded.
"Of course."
That was all I'd planned on. Now that she'd pointed it out, I could understand why she wanted to set expectations. But with all the things I'd been nervous about, sex wasn't on the list. I could see that she might be the type to attract attention. I liked her hair, fine and bright yellow like corn, but I'd never been interested in people like that. I'd expected that to change as I'd gotten older, but those much-vaunted pubescent urges just never struck me the same way they seemed to hit other people. I didn't mind. It meant I could focus on more important priorities, like not dying. That was one of my favorite hobbies. Once we were seated, I asked the obvious question.
"So what's all this about Rupert Kent?"
She took a deep breath.
I know it's not my place to go asking someone of your stature anything, but please, you can't go telling anyone about this.
I was curious before, but now I was intrigued. I nodded.
Okay, I won't say anything.
Now what's this about?
She sighed, putting a hand over her eyes.
It's a bit of a tale.
I adjusted my chair, leaning back.
I've got time. I suppose the first thing you need to know is that I'm from outside Ellis.
Marissa turned her head away from me, sounding wistful.
Spent my first years on a farm outside of Kentsford.
Kentsford? As in House Kent, I take it? She nodded.
The same, my lord. House Kent be country nobles, and they've some of the finest lands outside of the gate. One day me parents and I were hunting your home, within our rights, mind you, and we came upon a noble's party galloping through. Wouldn't have been no problem, save that their son be with them, and be of age with me.
I wasn't sure how that was an issue, so I just waited for them to continue.
Little boy Kent says he thinks I'm pretty, and that he wants to take me home. Thought he was just having a laugh, but then I see an older man, much older, looking me over, and I can see his eyes, and I know he thinks me real pretty too.
She shuddered, her jaw tightening.
Can't imagine he had any shortage of young girls about with all their lands and coins, but maybe I'm just the right kind. Kid is getting real insistent with the parents, so they humour him. The older man comes to talk to my father, sounding real apologetic-like, and explains that he's Baron Kent and asks if he'd like to send his daughter to stay with them for a while. My father's not having any of it. She's only 9, he says. I was 11, but slight of frame at the time. Why don't you ask her what she'd like? The Baron asks, all charm and smiles.
I gritted my teeth. I didn't like where this was going.
So my dad, he asked me real nice if I'd like to go with the boy. I shake my little head and cling to his leg, knowing even then that there was nothing good to be had from that. Father says he's sorry, and wishes the Baron the best of luck on his hunt, and takes me straight home. The little boy whines until we're long out of sight.
She folds her hands in her lap.
If that was the end of it, I'd have thought no more of it. But each year he shows up again. Doughty thinks I'll change my mind, but he never stops. Was hoping my attunement would finally put him off, but you saw him in class.
I'd known that country nobles had a reputation for taking their status much more seriously than my own family did. I expected that higher-ranking nobles in the city probably did too, but I hadn't spent a lot of time around them. My family had only been nobility for a few generations. We'd been granted it for military service, so we weren't exactly old-blooded traditionalists. I hadn't realized just how much of a difference that would make, though. A child wanting to play with another child was one thing. Treating another person like a possession was something else entirely.
I'm sorry that you had to deal with that. I knew the statement was insufficient, especially given the implication that Kent's father might have been trying to get her to come home with them.
Disgusting wasn't a strong enough word to describe what that implied.
Nice of you to say so, but you'll forgive me if I'm a bit distrustful.
I sighed.
I understand. Goddess, I don't know what I'd do in your place. Do you think he knows that his father was, well, interested in you?
I rubbed my forehead.
She shook her head. Don't think so. But don't you start spreading that.
I won't. I just figured that might put things into context.
Get him to stop bothering you.
He'd just laugh at me. Not to be rude, but you don't know him like I do. That's clear as city sky. Not a chance he'd believe, even if you'd be telling him. And even if he did believe it, I doubt he'd care a whick.
That certainly made things trickier.
All right. Well, you're right, I don't know him, but I would like to get to know you. No, just to be clear, I don't mean intimately. I just mean that you seem competent, and our team could use someone who can punch out lightning.
Marissa breathed a laugh.
I suppose that's something I could do for you.
Also, you don't need to worry about my family being important, or being rude to me. I'm about the least important noble in the world right now. I'll explain my whole story to you later, if you're interested in hearing it.
She bit her lip over a mouth that was still trying to smile before she said,
I suppose it would be.
She seemed much happier than she had when our conversation began.
All right, then.
But for the moment, if you're willing, I think we both have some papers to sign.
I offered my hand to clasp. She accepted it.
Last day, the 9th week of school, the day of our first test. I scratched absently at my wrist, just under the demigauntlet, while we waited outside the testing room. I'd finished making the necessary adjustments the night before. It seemed to be working, as intended now, at least in my initial tests. I didn't have time to ask Professor Vellum to look it over after I'd finished making the changes, so I was hoping I wouldn't have to make use of it during the test. Of course, knowing me, I'd find some way to convince myself to use it either way. We had a few minutes before our time slot, and I could tell most of the others were just as nervous as I was. Even Jin was showing it in his own stoic sort of way, shifting his eyes from side to side a little more frequently than necessary as he leaned against the wall near the door. Patrick was the worst, visibly rolling back and forth on his feet. We all knew that the stakes of this test were high. It was worth up to 100 points, 1/5 of what we needed to graduate. Even more importantly, a failing grade would result in immediate expulsion, straight to military service, no further training. I couldn't afford to let that happen. I needed this training, as well as the chance to serve out my military years as a climber. I would not let myself fail here. Sarah examined her watch, a purchase from our recent shopping excursion.
5 minutes to go, she shook her head. Try to breathe, Patrick.
He gave a nervous chuckle.
Breathing. Right. I knew I was forgetting something.
She smirked. As for the rest of you, once we get inside, just follow my lead. If this is anything like the actual tower, we won't have any difficulty.
When I said most of us were nervous, Sarah was the exception. Her grin was razor sharp and her eyes glowed with eagerness. I wish I could have mirrored her enthusiasm. The doors opened a couple minutes later and an unfamiliar second-year student let us inside. She was a short, black-skinned girl with stylish spectacles and a pristine serpent-class uniform. I'd never been inside the testing facility before. I knew Tristan had taken a practice judgment in a similar place at a different school, but I never had the chance to do the same. The entry room was remarkable in its unremarkableness. Just white-painted walls, a row of 5 chairs, and doors at the center of each wall. It was perfectly square, maybe 20 feet across. The older student led us to the chairs. Sit. We took our seats, glancing at each of the doors. They weren't marked. The student folded her arms.
Okay, we're short on time, so I'll get right to it. The first test is with smaller groups, so you're splitting up. 2 groups of 2, 1 standby. Both the groups of 2 will start at the same time in different tests. Either of them can call in the standby to swap out for one of their members at any time. I'll give you a signet to call the swap. You've got, she looked at her wrist, but she wasn't wearing a watch, 3 minutes to pick your teams. Wait here.
With that, she walked away, heading into the room directly opposite from where we'd entered. We dragged our chairs into a circle and then looked expectantly at Sarah. She drew back, glancing around.
Don't stare at me! This is a group decision!
We kept staring. She caved with a characteristic eye roll.
Okay, fine.
She pursed her lips and looked around at us.
This is a good opportunity for us to work together on a smaller scale. It'll help with our teamwork when we do the bigger tests. I'm sure that's the point.
She paused, biting a hangnail on her thumb absently.
Jin, you're still not telling us what your attunement is, yeah?
They stared each other down. Jin looked away first.
Well, I could tell you, he said brightly, but it wouldn't necessarily be true.
The tone rang false after my exposure to his normal, formal stoicism. His normally wry humor had an edge to it. He was even more nervous than I realized. Sarah tilted her head back, clearly considering. She knew about the items I was making him, and I'd shown her the list of the ones I'd finished so far.
As our nominal leader, it was important that she had as good of an idea of his capabilities as possible.
Okay, she decided. You're sitting out. Corin, Patrick, and I have a pretty good idea of what you can do, and we'll call you in if we need to.
Jin nodded curtly.
A wise stratagem.
He rotated his shoulder, avoiding anyone's gaze. Sarah glanced at Marissa next.
Marissa, you're the strongest fighter we have. If they tell us which room is going to involve fighting, I'll put you in there with Patrick. He'll support you from range. If we're going in blind, you're with me. Any objections?
We shook our heads. It seemed like a pretty reasonable way to break things down. I folded my arms.
Anyone have any insights from other students? I know some of them were taking the test earlier this week. Sworn to secrecy.
Patrick was tapping his foot, probably unconsciously.
Think we'll get the same speech when we finish our test. Roland was adamant that there would be consequences if he spilled anything. From the sound of it, they're real serious about keeping this test a surprise.
That made sense. A test similar to the tower would be vastly easier if someone already knew the challenges in advance. I knew we'd be taking more than one test like this. I'd seen future tests on the schedule. At least two more tests of this kind before our first trip into the actual tower. Maybe more in the second half of the year. Maybe I could find a way to make some sort of observation device enchantment and leave it in one of the chambers. It would have to be one of the self-recharging kind, since I probably wouldn't have a chance to find it and recharge it. It'd be expensive, but observation devices were fairly standard. I was confident I could build one in time for the second test if I could afford the materials. I'd have to figure out a good way to hide it, though. Other students had certainly tried that sort of thing before, and the professors would be on the lookout for them. The older student came back out of the room holding a pair of bells.
Okay, who wants these?
Sarah reached out a hand.
I'll take them and distribute them once we know where we're going.
The student frowned.
Haven't picked your teams yet? You're out of time, kid.
Sarah tightened her jaw. I could see her biting back a retort about being a kid in her expression.
We have two team setups, depending on how much you're going to tell us about the rooms in advance. Do we get any foreknowledge on the types of challenges?
Nope.
Pick or I pick for you.
Sarah took the bells, then handed me one.
Plan B, then. You're with Patrick. Come on, Marissa.
We all stood up, arranging ourselves into teams.
All right, stand by, kid. Go into the room I was just standing in.
You two? She pointed at Sarah and Marissa, then at a door on the left side of the room.
Over there.
They walked to the door standing just outside it.
And you two, by the magical process of elimination, get to go to that door.
I rolled my eyes, waving for Patrick to follow me. When we reached the door, I tucked the bell away in a pouch on my side.
Case you kids didn't pick up on another obvious thing, this is a return bell. You can ring the bell if you want to swap out. Make sure the person ringing it is the one that wants to leave.
I'd guessed most of that, but it was good to confirm. A question occurred to me, though.
Any limit on the number of swaps we can do?
Nah, just going to cost you a headache. That was good, but
do we lose points for switching people?
Can't tell you how you're scored.
Does the bell stay with the person who rings it, or does it stay in the room?
I could tell she was getting annoyed, but it was worth it to push for as much information as I could get. Unfortunately, she had reached the end of her patience.
So many questions, she griped.
It'll drop where you used it. There'll always be a return bell in the test room. I looked across the room at Sarah.
Do we want to arrange preset times to switch and share info?
The older student wasn't having that.
Cute idea, kid, but you're out of strategy time. The test starts in 3, 2,
oh, resh,
1, go.
We opened our doors. The inside of my room was pitch black, so I hesitated to step inside immediately. That turned out not to matter. An unseen force yanked me inside the moment I processed the black. I heard an amused, "Have fun!" echoing from somewhere behind me as I stood amidst the dark. So, I wasn't afraid of the dark exactly, but I admit I was more than a little concerned. Yeah, concerned. That's a good word. Once I stopped shaking, I took a deep breath and considered my options.
I didn't have any kind of light magic available, but Patrick could probably illuminate the room with fire, assuming there wasn't anything combustible in the air. They wouldn't do that, would they? I held off on the suggestion, just in case the teachers were feeling particularly malicious with the room's design. I also wasn't even sure Patrick was still with me. Patrick, you there? There was a brief, disconcerting pause.
Yeah, sorry. I can't see, can you?
No, but I'm working on it.
Maybe I could see something with my attunement enabled?
I concentrated for a moment, activating my attunement. The light was nearly as blinding as the darkness. The whole room glowed brightly under my enhanced vision, which shouldn't have surprised me. The test was probably being constructed from a whole bunch of illusions and enchanted objects, meaning practically everything was magical. The luminescence of the objects in the room didn't extend to anything around them, so I wasn't exactly getting a clear image of the whole place, just glowing outlines within a canvas of black. It was enough to let me pick out some key features, though. The room itself was rectangular, and I was near one of the corners, standing on solid ground. A man stood next to me. Presumably that was Patrick, but I couldn't actually see that level of detail. All I could make out was a glowing person's outline. He had something in his right hand. A dueling cane, maybe? No door behind us, but I could see outlines that might have been door frames on two of the walls. The center of the room was obscured, and it took me a few seconds to figure out what I was looking at. There was a dome-shaped cage with some light leaking through the bars, making it look almost solid. There was a humanoid figure standing inside the cage, arms uplifted toward the ceiling, completely immobile. That was mildly disconcerting. I saw something that looked like a box on the floor near a corner directly across from where I was standing. The glow around it was vibrant red, indicating some kind of destructive magic. An explosive, then? Or a trapped box? A rectangular wedge jutted out of the floor in front of the cage. It was too thin to be another box. It looked like a wall segment that was out of position. Finally, there were small, rod-like objects attached to several of the walls. It took me an embarrassingly long moment to realize what they were.
There are unlit torches on the walls. Can you make fire?
I hadn't disproven the presence of flammable gas, but my attunement wasn't picking up anything obvious, and the presence of torches pretty strongly implied they were meant to be lit.
Yeah, but I only know attack spells. They're not really meant for light.
I nodded, belatedly realizing he couldn't actually see my response.
That's fine. I'll guide you to a torch, and hopefully it's got some kind of material on the top you can ignite. If not, we'll try something else.
I wasn't big on touching other people, but it couldn't be helped. It was easier for me to tolerate when I was the one initiating contact, at least.
Going to grab your hand and lead you. Follow slowly.
Got it.
His skin felt weirdly clammy. Maybe that was normal, though. It had been a while since I'd held anyone's hand. A long while. I guided him to a torch on the wall nearest us and set his hand on top of it.
That's it. I'd recommend trying something weak.
I pulled my own hand away, taking a step back.
I could have figured that one out on my own, Corin.
The wry observation was tempered by Patrick's natural geniality.
Okay, let me see.
He took a breath.
Extinguished fire in the night, I beseech you to ignite!
A sphere of flame manifested in Patrick's hand and blasted through the torch, right into the wall behind it. I winced at the scorch marks left on the wall, but the spell succeeded at serving its purpose. The torch was lit, but not without consequence. The chime of a bell sounded in the distance. I frowned, looking around the room, but I couldn't see the source of the noise. I could see the rest of the room a bit more clearly, though, even with only one torch lit. We weren't far from the box. In better lighting, I determined that it was a box. Not a treasure chest, not a coffin, not even a wooden crate. A box. It had no obvious seams, cracks, or keyhole. I couldn't even tell what it was made out of. I could see the cage a little more clearly, too.
No prisoner inside, but there was something. A statue of Tenjin, the visage of inspiration. She was at the center of a fountain, with water descending from her uplifted hands into the basin below. I thought I caught a glimmer of something metallic near her feet, but it was still too dark to see. The torch itself was wrought from blackened metal, with a glass-encased top, almost like